Right now, your website is, well, it's likely turning away 90% of your ideal
Oh,
clients.
easily. At least 90%.
Right. And you are actually paying a monthly hosting fee for the privilege of turning them away.
It's kind of wild when you think about it like that.
It really is. Think about it for a second. We spend so much energy getting our digital storefronts online, right? But once they are up, we treat them like static monuments.
Yeah, you put your name up, maybe a contact form, and then you just step back.
Exactly. And today, we are dismantling that whole myth, the myth of the passive website.
It's a huge myth.
So, welcome to another deep dive. Our mission today is to take your digital footprint from this dusty online brochure and transform it into a relentless 24/7 employee.
Which is exactly what it should be.
Totally. And we have an incredible stack of audio sources to guide us through this. We are pulling insights from a network of business mentors, therapists, digital strategists, people like Jeanetta Garrison, Leanne Wood, Ashley Comis.
Patrick Cassell is in there too.
Yes, and Kate Hagberg, Robin Brandon, and Joe Sinnock. Now, it is worth noting up front, while a lot of these specific stories come from the therapy world, this is a masterclass for anyone.
Oh, absolutely anyone. Whether you're a freelance graphic designer, a fitness coach, or, a corporate consultant, the architecture of digital trust, it's identical across the board.
Right. We are looking at how to attract the right people, repel the wrong ones, and eventually scale into high-ticket, real-world
That's
experiences.
the ultimate goal.
Okay, let's unpack this. I want to start with a fundamental shift moving from treating your site like a brochure to engineering it as a real business tool.
Right. So that distinction actually comes from a framework by consultant Leanne Wood.
Leanne Wood, yeah.
She argues that most independent business owners are trapped in what she calls the brochure mindset.
The brochure mindset.
Yeah. They view their website as this checklist item just to prove they
It's
exist.
like, look, I'm a real business. Here's my URL.
Exactly. Just collecting digital dust. But for a site to actually generate revenue and save you time, Leanne says it has to actively play four distinct roles at once.
Okay, what are they?
It needs to be an attractor, a communicator, an organizer, and a launcher.
I love that. And I really want to look closely at the organizer part and that whole brochure mindset because of Jeanetta Garrison's story in the sources.
Oh, the stacked rocks.
Yes, the stacked rocks. I think anyone who has ever built a DIY site will find this painfully relatable.
Oh, for sure.
When she first launched her private practice, she went the standard DIY route and she put the ultimate therapist cliche right on her homepage.
A serene, high-definition picture of stacked river rocks.
Exactly. It's so funny.
It's basically the visual equivalent of saying, I do not have a specific brand or a point of view yet, so here is a picture of something calming.
Right. She thought the website was just an online placeholder until she could deal with it later.
Which is what everyone does.
But she ended up going through this rigorous business boot camp, and she had this jarring realization that generic, stacked rocks website, it was actively manufacturing administrative work for her.
Because it wasn't filtering anyone.
Exactly. People with issues she didn't specialize in were calling constantly, and she was spending hours on the phone explaining she couldn't help them.
Which brings us right to that organizer role in Leanne Wood's framework.
Right?
An organizing website serves as a filtration system to protect your time. Let's look at how Janetta operates now. When her schedule gets fully booked, she doesn't just let the phone ring.
That would be a nightmare.
Right. It takes her less than 60 seconds to update her contact page to say clearly, I am fully booked.
But she doesn't stop there, right?
No, she goes a step further and actually embeds active referral links to directories like Therapy for Black Girls.
So the visitor doesn't just hit a dead end and get frustrated.
Precisely. Mechanically, the website is handling the triage for her. It organizes the workflow, it pre-qualifies the traffic, and actively redirects the overflow. She's saving literally hours of unpaid admin labor that used to be lost to playing phone tag.
Okay, I follow the logic there, but I have to push back a little on this idea that the website needs to do so much heavy lifting.
Oh, let's hear it.
Isn't a website at its core really just a digital billboard? Like, if I'm driving down the highway, I don't want the billboard to give me the history of the restaurant or sort me into
You
categories.
just want the exit number.
Right. I just need the exit number. You're describing a website that acts like a bouncer and a concierge combined.
That's a good way to put it.
But if we start adding all these functional layers, separate landing pages for consulting, different pages for group therapy, wait lists, doesn't that just fundamentally overwhelm the visitor?
What's fascinating here is that user behavior data shows the exact opposite.
Really?
Yeah. Compartmentalization actually reduces cognitive load. Leanne Wood puts it perfectly. She says clarity converts. Think about the user's journey. If someone is urgently looking for group therapy and you dump them onto a massive generic services page,
where they have to scroll endlessly.
Exactly. They have to scroll past individual counseling, your corporate speaking gigs, your personal bio. That is overwhelming.
Okay, I see that.
When you create dedicated specific pages for specific offers, it acts as a sorting mechanism. The user clicks the one thing they need and the rest of the site effectively vanishes. It feels custom built for them.
That makes total sense. But a great concierge is only effective if they actually speak the language of the guest, right?
Oh, absolutely.
You can have the best sorting mechanism in the world, but if the text on the page is alienating or just boring, they're going to bounce.
They'll leave in 2 seconds.
So how do we approach the copywriting? Because honestly, that seems like the most intimidating part of this entire process.
It is intimidating. And mostly because our instinct is always to prove we are qualified.
Right. We want to list out the resume.
We want to list our degrees, our certifications. But the core insight across all these strategists we listen to is what they call the empathy first approach.
Empathy first.
Yeah. And we see this brilliantly executed by Joe Sanok. When he was doing a live website build for Great Lakes Online Counseling, he and his design team made a really deliberate choice to hide his resume.
Wait, they buried his credentials.
Well, they didn't bury them entirely, but they removed them from the hero section.
Okay, so that prime digital real estate you see right before you scroll.
Exactly. Instead of saying, you know, I went to this university and I have 10 acronyms after my name, the massive text at the very top of his site just simply reads, "When life feels heavier than it should."
Oh, wow. That immediately changes the dynamic.
Totally. It's not about him at all. It's about the visitor's pain.
But writing copy that raw, that requires a level of vulnerability that, I mean, that triggers intense imposter syndrome for a lot of people.
Oh, 100%.
I was really struck by Kate Hagborg's story in the audio stack. She had this new, emotionally driven copy ready to go, but she was literally terrified to hit publish.
She felt like a fraud.
Right. She felt like a fraud for claiming she could facilitate these deep transformations.
And her solution to that imposter syndrome was something I think every business owner should steal.
Oh, absolutely.
She didn't just sit there and try to manifest confidence. She went out and gathered qualitative data.
Right. She conducted these outcomes conversations.
Yes.
She sat down with her past clients and explicitly asked them, "What actually changed for you after working with me?"
And the data she got was staggering.
It was. One client revealed they had been actively suicidal before they started working together, and through the work, they completely turned their life around.
And Kate had no idea the stakes were that high when they started.
Right. So by taking the literal verbatim phrases her clients used to describe their pain and their transformation, she wasn't just guessing what to write anymore.
The data cured her imposter syndrome.
Exactly. It gave her the confidence to rewrite her copy and transition her entire business to private pay.
And, you know, that empathy, that mirroring of the client's internal state, it doesn't stop at the text. It extends into the visual language, too.
Well, like Janetta Garrison.
Exactly. Janetta, who moved on from her stacked rocks, applied this empathy to her photography.
Yeah, she built a highly specific Pinterest board before her professional photo shoot, right?
She did. She curated poses holding a coffee mug, standing comfortably by a whiteboard.
Yeah.
And she made sure her outfits matched the aesthetic of her actual home office where she took virtual calls.
The continuity there is just so smart. The digital space matches the physical reality of actually working with her.
And it paid off directly. She had a client book a session and explicitly cite a photo of Janetta wearing a bright yellow sweater.
The client said, "I just felt like I needed some sunshine."
Yes. It's so powerful.
It is. But let me challenge this hyperfocus for a second.
Okay, go ahead.
Let's use the analogy of a dog whistle. If niche copywriting is like tuning a dog whistle, so only one highly specific audience hears the frequency and everyone else just walks by undisturbed.
Right.
Aren't we leaving money on the table? Like, if my site only speaks to high-achieving adults with anxiety, I'm essentially turning away the other 90% of the market.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, you'll see why the generalist approach is actually the fastest way to go out of business.
Okay, tell me why.
Ashley Collins has a great perspective on this in the sources.
Yeah.
She notes that human beings make purchasing decisions emotionally first.
Right.
And then we justify those decisions logically.
We buy with the heart, justify with the brain.
Exactly. So when your copy speaks directly to a hyper-specific pain point, the client feels an immediate, visceral, emotional resonance. They literally read the page and think, are they inside my head?
So the niche copy does the heavy lifting for you.
It does. Ashley equates generalist copy to screaming into the void. If you're trying to appeal to everyone, your copy is just watered down.
Mm-hmm.
That means when you finally get someone on a discovery call, you have to do all the work of convincing them you understand their specific problem. Highly targeted, niched copy pre-sells the client.
I see. So you aren't turning away 90% of the market. You're magnetizing the 10% who will gladly pay your full fee without a second thought because they feel profoundly understood.
That is exactly it.
Okay, so let's say we have executed this perfectly. We've built the concierge sorting architecture. We have written this incredible empathetic dog whistle copy. We've got the authentic yellow sweater photography.
You're fully optimized.
Right. But all of that beautiful emotional resonance is essentially winking in the dark if the algorithm can't read it.
If nobody lands on the site, none of it matters.
Exactly. So how do we build the technical back end to actually get eyes on this platform?
Well, this is where we cross into the mechanics of SEO, search engine optimization, and site architecture. And honestly, it often starts with the simplest friction points, like naming conventions.
Naming conventions.
Yeah, Robin Brennan gave a very practical example. Her legal business name is Better Together Family Therapy.
Okay.
But when she was setting up her digital footprint, she purchased the URL betterfamilytherapy.com.
She truncated the name. But why give up the exact brand match?
Because of user friction.
Yeah.
The full name creates email addresses that are ridiculously long and highly prone to typos.
Oh, of course.
Right. If a potential client misspells your email because it's 30 characters long, you lose the lead. In digital architecture, functionality and findability have to override clever branding.
That makes a lot of sense, removing human friction. But if we want to talk about removing algorithmic friction, we have to talk about Ashley Comas's multi-state SEO strategy.
That strategy is brilliant.
It really is. Ashley is a military spouse, so her family relocates constantly. Historically, if you run a local service business, moving means shutting down and starting from scratch.
You abandon all your local search ranking.
Exactly. But Ashley engineered an online practice using hidden, location-specific pages.
It's a complete manipulation of how search engines crawl data.
Let's break down how that actually works for the listener. She has a page strictly targeting Hickam Air Force Base in Hawaii.
Right.
But if I go to her homepage and look at her navigation menu, I won't see it. It's totally invisible to the casual browser.
Yeah.
But if a family stationed at Hickam searches for a counselor near them, her highly specific page ranks on the first page of Google. How is Google finding a page that isn't even on her menu?
It comes down to understanding XML sitemaps and direct indexing. You see, you don't need a link on your main menu for Google's web crawlers to find a page.
You don't.
Not at all. As long as the page is published, optimized with localized long-tail keywords like counseling for military families at Hickam and submitted to the search engine's index, it will rank.
Wow.
Ashley is building these hyper-local nets all over the country. She targets the exact neighborhood without cluttering her main site's user interface.
It's incredible. But generating that volume of highly targeted content for multiple locations, I mean, that sounds like a recipe for total burnout.
It really is, which is why Joe Sinnock advocates for hacking the content creation process using AI.
But not just letting AI write generic fluff.
Right. No, definitely not. Joe uses artificial intelligence, but he doesn't let it write from scratch. He takes chapters from his actual published book, Dating After Betrayal, and feeds his own original thoughts into the AI.
Okay.
Then he prompts it to summarize his chapters into 500 to 800 word articles.
So he retains his actual expertise and his voice, but the AI handles the formatting and the keyword integration.
Right. It's his brain, AI's muscle. And to compound that efficiency, Robin Brandon adds a crucial philosophy to this whole SEO game.
What's that?
Good enough is good enough.
I love that.
She argues that you should publish your localized pages or your blog posts, even if they are slightly imperfect. Do not let a page sit on your hard drive for 6 months while you agonizingly tweak a single comma.
But why the rush? Why publish something imperfect?
Because of algorithmic trust, specifically domain and page age. Search engines heavily favor older content because longevity is a trust signal.
Okay.
A slightly imperfect page that has been live, indexing, and slowly gaining authority for 6 months will almost always outrank a grammatically flawless page that you just published yesterday.
Wow, okay. But hearing all of this, the hidden orphaned pages, feeding book chapters into AI, stressing over algorithmic trust signals. It feels like we're just building a maze for robots.
It can definitely feel that way.
Like we are contorting our businesses to appease the Google crawl bots, and it feels like we're forgetting the human being on the other side of the screen. Where does the actual human fit into this invisible back-end architecture?
This raises an important question. It's easy to get lost in the tech, absolutely. But the architecture isn't replacing the human, it's engineering seamless access to the human.
Seamless access.
Yeah, let's look at the tangible results of Robin Brandon's setup. Before she optimized her site, she was manually writing down names on a legal pad to track callers she couldn't fit into her schedule.
Oh man, a legal pad.
It was messy, human error was high, and people in pain were slipping through the cracks. She changed that by engineering her site to funnel every single overflow inquiry into an automated newsletter waitlist.
So instead of a legal pad, she has an actively managed database.
Exactly. Now, what happens when she hires a new clinician who needs to fill their caseload?
Right. In the old system, she'd spend 3 days playing phone tag, leaving voicemails, hoping people still needed help.
But with the digital architecture, she drafts one single email, hit send to that segmented waitlist, and you remember the result.
Yes. She filled 16 slots in exactly 90 minutes.
16 slots in 90 minutes.
That is the definition of leveraging technology. The robotic architecture, the waitlist, the automated email drop it served the human by instantly connecting people in crisis with a professional who actually had the capacity to help them seamlessly.
That is the active 24/7 employee in action.
Okay, so let's track where we are on this journey. We've built the digital concierge to sort the traffic. We have injected the dog whistle, empathetic copy that makes the reader feel profoundly seen.
Yeah.
We've engineered the hidden SEO pages and the automated waitlist to keep the pipeline full.
Right.
But eventually, you hit a ceiling. Your team is at capacity. You literally have 0 hours left in the week. How do you scale out of the digital space and monetize your expertise in the real world?
You leverage the deep digital trust you have cultivated to sell high-ticket, real-world experiences.
And the masterclass on this comes from Patrick Cassell.
Patrick is incredible at this. He has scaled his business by hosting these highly specialized, intensive entrepreneurial retreats in locations like Ireland, Spain, Portugal.
And we are talking about premium tickets here.
Oh, yeah. Ranging from $4,000 to $6,500 per person.
And the most insane part is that they sell out in a single day.
A single day.
Yeah.
And they sell out entirely through the strategic generation of FOMO, fear of missing out, cultivated on his social media and email list.
But FOMO isn't just, you know, posting a pretty picture of an Irish castle, right? What is the actual mechanism making people drop $5,000 in an hour?
It's the engineering of scarcity and exclusivity.
Hmm.
Patrick doesn't just announce the event. He documents the curation of it.
He takes people behind the scenes.
Right. He shows the scouting process. He talks about the specific limited number of beds in the villa. He builds this narrative that a highly exclusive, tight-knit community is forming, and if you don't act immediately when the cart opens, you will be left on the outside watching it happen on Instagram.
It's brilliant marketing, but Patrick is very explicit that hosting a retreat is not a magic bullet for a stalled business.
No, definitely not.
He outlines three fatal mistakes of event hosting that will literally bankrupt you if you ignore them. Let's go through them. Mistake number one. Having no established audience.
You cannot book a $10,000 non-refundable villa in Bali and just assume the algorithm will find people to fill it.
Right. You cannot rent someone else's audience. You must own your own list.
Which leads to mistake number two. Vague themes. Simply marketing an event as come to Bali and relax will not sell a premium ticket.
Because a luxury hotel can offer relaxation.
Exactly. A retreat must offer a specific painful transformation. Patrick's retreats, for example, are themed around a core entrepreneurial block. He calls it the Doubt Yourself, Do It Anyway intensive.
That's so specific.
It is. It's designed to physically remove business owners from their environment to break through their paralysis.
And then there's fatal mistake number three, which is where I think most people get completely blindsided.
Oh, yeah. Relying on unpaid guest speakers to market the event for you.
Patrick says absolutely no one will market your event harder than you.
It is the most common trap in event organizing.
But let me play devil's advocate here. Let's use a DJ analogy. If I throw a massive party and I hire a famous DJ, I absolutely expect that DJ to leverage their massive following to pack my dance floor.
Right, that's the assumption.
So if you invite a major influencer or a respected author to speak at your retreat, Why is Patrick so fiercely against relying on them to drive ticket sales?
Because of a hard-learned lesson in contract law and human behavior. Exposure is not a legally binding currency.
Exposure doesn't pay the rent.
Exactly. If you hire a big name to speak, but you don't compensate them fairly, or worse, you fail to lock them into a strict promotional contract that dictates exactly how many emails they must send to their list.
Right.
And how many social media posts they owe you, they're going to do the absolute bare minimum.
Because they have their own business to run.
Exactly. Without a contract, they will fly in, show up, deliver their one-hour keynote, take your check, and immediately head back to the airport.
Wow.
They will not blast their precious email list to sell your tickets out of the goodness of their hearts. If you build a business model that relies on someone else doing the marketing labor for free, you will end up staring at an empty room, deeply resentful, and thousands of dollars in debt.
That is a harsh reality check. Yeah. You must own your audience and you must pay your contributors fairly if you expect them to function as affiliates.
100%.
So what does this all mean? The journey we've mapped out today is really a total paradigm shift for anyone with a Wi-Fi connection and a service to sell.
It really is.
It means looking critically at your digital presence and finally abandoning the passive, stacked rocks brochure. It requires the vulnerable, unglamorous work of talking to your past clients so you can gather the data to write dog whistle copy that resonates emotionally.
Right.
It means rolling up your sleeves to build smart, hidden SEO architecture so the algorithm actually serves your ideal client. And ultimately, it means leveraging all of that hard-earned digital trust to launch highly profitable, deeply transformative, real-world events that you completely control.
It is a phenomenal roadmap. But as you look at your own digital footprint, I want to leave you with one final provocation.
Okay, let's hear it.
We've spent this entire deep dive analyzing optimization, site architecture, and using AI to scale content.
Yeah.
But as AI continues to flood the internet with grammatically flawless, heavily optimized, perfectly structured, yet utterly generic content, perhaps the ultimate search engine optimization of the future won't rely on keywords at all.
Oh, interesting.
When everyone has a perfect website, the only way to stand out will be through radical, unfiltered human vulnerability.
Wow.
Will your perfectly polished, meticulously optimized digital presence soon feel like a sterile relic, while the messy, deeply personal, undeniably human brands inherit the digital earth?
That is a brilliant question to leave us with. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Take a hard look at your digital footprint this week. Is it a dynamic, tireless employee, or is it just a flag planted on the moon?
Mm-hmm.
We'll see you next time.